Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hi, my name is Brianna Contreras, and I'm Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. In this episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite, I spoke with Amy Dirks-Stevens, Executive Vice President of Digital Strategy Performance and Practice Lead at Avia Health. The two of us talked about automation in health systems and how it can be a solution to budget issues and creating more efficiency in the workplace. We also discussed areas where health system leaders can begin to leverage artificial intelligence. Well, hello, Amy. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Brianna. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you for joining us on an episode of Tuning in the C-Suite.
It's great to be here and with your listeners.
Thank you. So for the first question, to start things off, can you first just tell me about what it is that you do and what is Avia's mission?
Avia has a really unique place in the market within healthcare right now, and that is we are a group of health systems and payers and children's hospitals who have come together as a network, all in service of digitally transforming their organizations in order to promote not just their survival, but the ability to deliver continually improved care at a better price point, as well as performance inside of the healthcare ecosystem. And we serve as a strategic partner and advisor to these different organizations, particularly health systems, to help them accelerate their time to value for adopting digital, to help them decrease the overall cost and increase the performance they get out of becoming more automated, and then greatly to reduce the risk because they come together as a network and they share the war stories in real time, which is often missing when you're on the frontier of a new way of building business and operating models. In a nutshell, we help health systems make better decisions faster and with confidence.
Awesome, great. And then again, if you can just share, what it is that you do at Avia?
Sure, I am the practice leader for a part of the organization that helps health systems with their core operations transformation. So if you think of consumerism and growth as being a really key part, and you think of the actual care delivery as being a really key part of what happens in healthcare, there's also just running the company. What does it take to run the company itself? And what type of company will you become in this new world as many disruptors are coming in and changing what it means to be a payer or a health system or a children's hospital? And so we look at business operations, financial operations, clinical operations, the experience of the workforce, and then the automation that sits all around and inside of that.
Wonderful, thank you. Now, several industries are automating operational tasks already. So why do you think healthcare is lagging behind, and what can we learn from what other industries are doing well right now?
I think in large part healthcare is lagging behind because there was a belief that we were complex and we had people's lives in our hands, and in reality there's other industries that are extremely complex as well, and that do have life and health, life and safety in their hands. And so if you really dig to the next level below it, you see that we're a very labor intense industry that does not have standardized processes, which is often one of the key things that it takes to automate, is to know your process and standardize it. And we also have very disparate data sources that do not connect, another key part of automation. And then finally, we're still a very disaggregated and sort of fractured industry. Even our very largest health systems pale in comparison in size to a lot of other industries. When you look at a giant airline industry or a chemical manufacturer or manufacturing, so even the largest health systems, there is a lot of room still left in this industry for consolidation, that can underwrite and make consistency and optimization actually create value.
Thank you. Now, can you share maybe some financial and operational benefits health systems can gain by leveraging automation? And also, what's at stake if they don't embark on this work?
Sure. So we think there's a lot of KPIs that can be driven by digital for sure, and by automating. When we think of kind of at the broad level, what type of performance changes do you want to achieve? We often see there are kind of six critical areas that health systems in particular are looking for. They're looking for automation to help them reduce cost, to improve the provider, such as the physician or nurse or staff member's experience. You know, what is it like to do the work inside of your job? And is it, you know, tedious, full of errors, hard to do? And you hear that over and over again, for instance, with physicians documenting in the EMR. They're also looking for performance improvement in revenue capture or revenue growth. So how do these organizations grow in the face of significant disruption and significant payment changes? They're also looking for human capital optimization. Said another way, how productive can we be? There's some really interesting statistics that show healthcare is even less productive than the federal government, which tells us two things. A, we don't want to be there, but B, there's a lot of room for improvement. Yeah. Where even simple automation steps can start to have a big effect. And in an industry where 60% of all costs are based on human labor, you know that if you can make even a small dent in that, you quickly can change the overall financial picture of an organization. The final two areas that we see people seeking automation results or performance improvement are around clinical efficiencies. You know, let's not forget we're here to deliver care and improve wellness. Mm-hmm. And so how can you be both efficient in that care delivery? And then how can the outcomes be improved? You know, for some organizations, they want automation to at least produce the same result, because sometimes the early automation actually can be cumbersome a bit on its own. So can at least give me the same result, but maybe in a much more efficient way. The holy grail, of course, is if you can be more efficient and have a better outcome. And then the final is there's a patient or a consumer that sits in this experience. And a great example of that is the patient financial journey. We know on the back end inside of every health system, there's armies of people who are coding what's just been delivered as care and dropping it into bills and sending it to payers and getting authorization from payers to see a specialist or get a surgery done. And all of that can be automated, both inside the provider, the health system, as well as the insurance company or payer. But there's a front end that when you go and talk to people who've had care, you know, anytime in the last, kind of any time, mm-hmm. One of the things that they will say is one of the biggest frustrations was not the care itself, but it was how to access that care. And then the trauma that often results of the entire bill paying process, you know, how to find out if their specialist referral has been approved, is in network, what are they going to have to pay? How are they going to set up a payment plan? And so automation can not only improve the back end operations, but it can dramatically improve what the end user experience, which has a really great benefit for health systems and payers. And that is, not only can you reduce the cost it takes, for instance, to drop a bill, to interact with a patient, but if you do that really well, imagine what a competitive advantage that can be for you in the market. If you're like the health system that people actually say, gosh, that was one of the easiest times I've ever gotten care.
Yeah.
And I understood my bill and they didn't send me to collections because I thought it was, you know, an explanation and not a bill. So you can start to see how automation not only has a cost reduction, a revenue improvement, a satisfaction, it can start to become a growth engine and a market differentiator.
Yeah, I mean, it seems very efficient and saves a lot of time, you know, as the result as well. So that's great.
Absolutely.
Now, to kind of switch over to the subject of COVID, COVID has obviously put an enormous strain on the entire healthcare workforce. How do you think the pandemic has impacted health system acceptance of AI or artificial intelligence?
So while it's not the situation any of us would have signed up for,
right.
And having been a health system executive for many years and a chief operating officer, I can, you know, my condolences and my gratitude go out to every person that is out there, you know, running frontline organizations that are saving lives, you know, at this moment in the worst peak we've ever seen. But what it has done has cracked open and in some cases just created this massive wide open door that we've never had before, because it forced us to test and debunk myths. There have been a lot of myths along the way of, for instance, with telehealth, that you know, physicians would feel that it is a substandard type of care. When I can't lay hands on a patient, when I can't look in their eyes, when I can't read their body language, and that patients would in no way accept that as a realistic surrogate for an inpatient visit, or that certain types of specialty care could only be done in person because it's a highly specialized, you know, type of care. Or that payers would say, hey, you know, that clearly must only cost $10 to deliver that care, even though there's still, you know, a set of activities that go around it. And if we use telehealth as an example, within days, every one of those myths has been debunked. And we've seen health systems that were doing, literally one health system was doing only 40 visits a month, a large health system,
wow.
By telehealth, because of all these types of assumptions, and oftentimes those assumptions made it so that there hadn't been the level of actual investment you needed to scale, and the level of knowledge in a community that it was available, you know, the driver by a payer to use telehealth instead of in person, all of those other structural things. But we've seen them go from 40 visits to 100,000 visits, you know, in dramatic time. We've got health systems now that are tracking over 3 million telehealth visits and more. And so what it's shown is these ideas that we had about the acceptance of technology has changed. Another really great example is if you think of, let's go back to bill pay. If you think of what happens in the revenue cycle side, so we're talking operations, financial operations now, there are armies of staff that unfortunately are needed to process bills, you know, to drop bills and to receive payment, et cetera, and to work with the payer. Most of that work has typically been done in place in a physical location with all of that staff physically assembled. Many of those staff were furloughed or sent home because they were not direct care, you know, caregivers. There was no reason to put them in harm's way inside of a building full of COVID. And so quickly, management, as well as the staff themselves, had to figure out how to do their work remotely. These were people who had never been issued a laptop because right. They never did their work from home, right? They're often on still very paper-based systems. And their systems really varied a lot between hospitals or clinics because of the, you know, local practices and you know, habits they had. And so to move people to the same technology platform that is automated allows you to manage and run a remote workforce differently, which is also having a really interesting effect where health systems now, and we worked with many of them, are saying, what type of physical space do I need for the workforce in the future? You know, do I need as many buildings and what needs to happen in those buildings? And it's not just for care. You know, we've all heard, do I need as many beds in the future? Because could I have hospital at home beds, et cetera? But they're also saying that about core operations and staff. And so what we, you know, we can all count the reasons we hate COVID, but I would also say there's a lot of love for COVID in that it's created the snowplow we are sitting behind, that is opening this amazing new pathway where automation is seen as both essential and beneficial, and has challenged many of the beliefs that we've seen before. You know, to give a few other examples, the health systems that we work with, you know, those that participate in the Avia network have self-identified as having already seen that digital was the way of the future. And it wasn't digital kind of for the sake of technology, where I'm just gonna, you know, airdrop a really cool app into the health system or a really cool thing that works off of an iPad. They were saying we have to be digital. We have to operate in an automated fashion, right? Mm-hmm. And so those health systems were poised. They were more prepared. They were able to act faster. And in many cases, they may have had smaller, less scaled versions. So they may have already had, for instance, a virtual triage where you could log in and you could do, you know, test your symptoms, and it would tell you, you know, you need an office visit, you need to come into an urgent care, or, you know, call the ambulance, right? Those could suddenly be scaled quickly. For those that were already starting to automate financial functions or clinical functions, they were able to scale and not have to start for ground zero. But we also, you know, started working with a lot of health systems who said, and to the credit of a lot of technology companies who started offering their technology for free for at least a period of time, we saw that there was just an opening up of the idea of how you could run a business in an automated way. And what came together was this ecosystem of entrepreneurs and solution providers who had either technology that was already really good for this, like telemedicine, like financial operations that could already be automated so that you could have, you know, a workforce spread across the country. You had that ecosystem to come together. You had health systems who were either predisposed and already well on their way, like a lot of Avia members or others who knew that this was coming. You know, there was no way to be in healthcare and not know that we were going to have to become more productive and more efficient by automating, but maybe they needed that big giant nudge, yeah. Like you're saying. And then we had regulators who stepped up and said, you know, we're going to give allowances for billing codes for, you know, use of technology, for instance. And you had payers who said the same thing. You had regulators who said, we're going to allow, you know, example that when you talk to patients, they find incredibly frustrating because they just don't know the regulatory policy behind it, is a provider can't practice out into another state without getting another license. So being able to deliver virtual care meant you still had to have providers in the same physical state you lived in many states. Even though somebody, if you had capacity and an expert in Louisiana and the patient in California, why not connect those two? So by regulators also stepping in, we started to see other structural changes that had just been kind of cycling inside of the industry that suddenly broke free, which was those forces coming together. And then, you know, the last, I would be remiss if I didn't say there's some really critical disruptors out there. You know, everyone from Amazon to employers who have said, we're just going to direct contract and provide telemedicine to directly to our employees and set up virtual clinics. We're going to provide remote monitoring equipment for you to be able to, you know, test your breathing and oxygen sats from your home. And so we saw others come in and also help push the envelope in a really concerted way.
Can you share some examples of areas where health systems can start automating to drive a meaningful impact?
Sure. So we have four big moves that we talk about that we believe are the key areas or ways that health systems should be starting, not just starting, but working really hard and quickly. There's a really interesting stat out there that 14% of of incumbents will come out of any major economic crisis stronger. And so, of course, we want those in our network and surely the industry as a whole to come out stronger. But what that takes is a really concerted effort, strategic effort about where should you make your bets, right? Where should you be working? So we believe there's two key areas. One is in growing your market share, and one is capturing and delivering value. And in growing the market share, that's around owning the on-ramp, right? How does a health system think about the marketplace of the consumer and having a virtual first service model? So how do you, in fact, you know, there's a term out there used frequently, how do you have a really strong digital front door? How does a consumer turn into a patient or stay a patient because it's easy to access you in a non-physical way, that you can book your appointment, you can find a provider, you can even get the care through a synchronous or asynchronous visit, through virtual triage, et cetera. So we believe that that is one of the first and best places to act if you're thinking about growth and retention. Retention is also particularly helpful around hyper-personalized care orchestration. So, you know, to use some business terms of things like customer acquisition, how do you acquire that patient and keep them in a more consumer-centric way? And how do they experience their care and have it navigated for them so that it helps navigate their care all the way through, or orchestrates their care? So instead of just being sent home from the hospital with a stack of paper on how to take care of your wound and when you should call back, you know, there are technologies, for instance, that act like a digital case manager or care manager. So you can snap a picture of the wound every day. You can send a text to the physician office about your pain scale. You can track, there's amazing technology out there for prenatal care that is both a digital, where you can track the mother's well-being and health during the pregnancy, but then you can also augment it, for instance, with monitoring devices. And we've seen really incredible results in higher birth weight and healthier baby and mom. The other two areas are around really doubling down in specialty care. We believe this big move is health systems at their core. You know, this is their birthright, is to have that that very expensive but also important chassis of specialty care. And how do you leverage technology and automation around precision diagnostics, chronic disease management, providing virtual care from afar, whether it's for autism or diabetes or oncology. And then finally, there's a set of activities where we see, we believe you'll come out the winner, if you will, if you're investing heavily in operations. And those are financial operations, they're around clinical operations, they're around human capital, they're around the ability to improve the provider experience, and they are also around health systems considering bringing in the tech platforms themselves, so that they can provide the technology themselves through things like RPA, so robotic process automation.
Okay, thank you. Now, will any of these forms of automating, will they replace existing healthcare workforce over time, do you think?
You know, so one of the things I always go back to, again, if I think about being a chief operating officer and a productivity officer, you ask most health systems and they will tell you that to deliver better care, they would actually like more patient contact and more patient engagement. And if you ask most healthcare providers, none of them say, we have way too many doctors, we have way too many nurses. And there's great stats out there, I'm sure our listeners know about this impending crisis with the boomers. And now we're gonna have a new bubble of people who will have chronic care issues related to COVID that we have never anticipated in the health system for many years to come. So you put, you know, the aging population, which already we knew was going to create or exacerbate an existing workforce shortage. You add on top of that, you know, and this is not talked about much, which is the long-term effect of those that survived COVID, but they will be impacted, their health will be impacted, you know, for a long or ever period of time. So what we look at is in thinking about doing the new work, is how can humans be augmented so that the administrative labor, the work that they're doing that is sort of mind-numbing, tedious, error-prone, how can that be reduced in order to essentially create new humans inside of healthcare that we already knew were needed? A really interesting stat, I had already referenced the 60% of costs in a health system are labor. Of that cost, fully 25% of it is based on is to do administrative tasks. It's charting. It's, you know, trying to figure out where the supply is. Where's the wheelchair? You know, can't find the wheelchair or the IV pump. It's you know, the time spent figuring out how to do staffing. It's time spent figuring out how to balance load all your operating rooms. And can you shift certain operations to outpatient procedures? All of that activity could not only be done electronically or digitally, but the work itself then can become both predictive and prescriptive. So we talk about, you know, one thing is to automate a human so their work can be done better. Another is when that automation yields insights that tell you, you know, last December, we had a really high census, a lot of people in our health system, or, you know, in beds, and a lot of people taking PTO because it was a holiday. You know what? We already can predict what we're going to need this December. And so 3 months in advance, you're planning for it rather than 2 weeks before. Now you're calling in expensive travelers. You're trying to offer premiums for overtime because you are using data differently to really predict what you need. When you go even further with automation, AI, machine learning, the machine actually starts to prescribe what you should do. So think of that next step in prescriptive staffing as being, you need this many respiratory therapists on this unit. Right now, all of that is based primarily on professional judgment and old historic data that isn't real-time learning and telling you what you need to do next. So what we see is that humans will become augmented and we'll get to do the things we actually enjoy and are uniquely qualified to do. And like, who wouldn't sign up for that gig?
Right. Okay. Now, are you able to share any change management tips for those introducing these new systems?
Sure. We really think about the adoption of technology as a process. Many people focus on actually the cool part, the fun part, which is looking at a whole bunch of different vendors or solution companies and looking at, you know, as we call them, bright and shiny objects. But the change management is what's key. So there are several things that we actually spend a lot of time, in fact, more time oftentimes than the way more time. Than the solution selection itself. And I'll give you a couple of the key steps for change management. One is to be really clear at the front on your strategy. You know, if you think you want to do telemedicine visits, or if you think you want to start adding in hospitals at home and hospital beds at home, what is the strategy for doing that? Sounds really cool. It's like, but why are you doing that? Are you doing it to grow? Are you doing it to shift capacity out of a physical hospital bed so that you can expand without having to build a new hospital? So thinking about strategic rationale, we really encourage people to build out a roadmap of what to prioritize first. You know, one of the things that often is that change management stopping point is when people talk about dependencies. You know, well, if we don't actually have a standardized process, how can you automate it? we don't have the data coming in from the, you know, from the ER to support the inpatient bed view, how can you prioritize? So helping people really prioritize. And a key one is stakeholder alignment. I can't tell you how many times we get people, we have really the privilege of getting everything from the board all the way down to frontline workers together in rooms and saying, what is the problem we're really trying to solve here? You know, if you're looking at behavioral health, is it really outpatient behavioral health with low acuity depression, or is it really those crisis patients, you know, who are suicidal coming in for acute care? But oftentimes, you know, you might start with, there's this horrible mental health crisis, and everybody gets in a room, and surely there's digital for that somewhere. So without getting that stakeholder alignment, you really struggle. And then the, you know, one other really key point is starting at the beginning with the performance outcome you want to have and setting that KPI in advance. It's there's a weird thing going on, which is people will often bring in technology and just kind of try it out and don't force performance out of it. They're like, let's try it and see what happens if we offer, you know, televisits, or if we let all of our people work from home using this technology. But you would, for instance, you'd never build two new operating rooms and let them sit 80% empty and say, well, 20% tried and used it, they sort of like it. So we really encourage health systems at the very beginning to think about performance metrics that they're trying to change. And we find that culture, that change management, by setting those, you start to get that alignment at every step to make it I will never say an easy, but a much easier process, and then converting to automation.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.